Matacumbe, Matacumbe.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Medfield College Film Society. I'm not the mama. I'm Jeff Crawford here with you. You know, I've spent my day just walking down the beach with my thumb up, looking at my society members, slowly walking up to them with my thumb up, saying it's good to see you all. Good for us. First thumbs up goes to my friend Andy Brown. How's it going, Andy?
Oh, Jeff, you know, I'm just, you know, hanging around putting girls' hands in water to see how, you know, if they like anybody, you know, as they sleep.
Did you do that a lot in middle school?
Yeah.
Get the pots of water out, the neighborhood sleepover. Yeah. Bring out the pots.
They got the pots. But yeah, I'm doing great.
Good, good. Excellent. Over in the, far away from the wilds. City boy, Mr. Robert McSwain, how's it going?
I've had a wild week. I've been trolling up and down the Tar River of North Carolina, just doing my thing and selling snake oil. And then it was just a bizarre day. I ended up having lunch with society member Jeff here.
That's true.
I'm on my way back to civilization here in the Queen City. So it's...
And the North Carolina freeways...
And the North Carolina freeways. That's right.
Yes, it's true. We had lunch. We discussed. We had a business meeting. We had a guy ask us, "How's business?"
He almost spilled water all over him.
We failed at the answer to that question, but
we just sat there and stared at him. I don't think. Did we even answer it, or we just kind of grunt at him? I don't remember.
I don't think we answered it. Yeah. Speaking of society members, I saw another society member this past week. So two out of three ain't bad.
That's right.
Michael Crawford, we met on the banks of the mighty Sasagula for some refreshment. And how you doing now?
Thumbs up. Thumbs up from me, too. And we should have gone to Bay Lake and acted out some scenes from our movie here.
Yeah, if we could have gone to Fort Wilderness, we would have been really close. We could have walked down that beach with our thumb up. And again, you know, there's Doc Terminus from Pete's Dragon is immortalized at the campfire sing-along.
Yeah.
They should really get the old Doc Snodgrass in there.
I had the exact same thing in my notes. I was like, we need Dr. Snodgrass representation here at Walt Disney World. We've got Doc Terminus. We need Doc Snodgrass.
It could be at Fort Wilderness. It could be, definitely could be at Riverside where I just was at. They could have like Doc Terminus's, or I'm sorry, Doc Snodgrass's, like, they could call that, they could have like a cocktail named after
Snodgrass.
Yeah.
Anyway. It could be on the Rivers of America in the Magic Kingdom, just that keelboat there all painted up.
That's also true. Oh yeah, off to the side. They could redo the river pirate scene with a overlay. Mm. Anyway, yeah. I guess we should tell people what we're talking about in case they don't know. Michael, what are we watching this week?
We're watching the 1976 Disney classic, Treasure of Matacumbe.
Matacumbe.
This movie was written by Don Tate, based on a book by Robert Louis Taylor. Tate wrote many Disney films of this era, including Snowball Express, Apple Dumpling Gang,
check,
Shaggy D.A.,
check,
Unidentified Flying Oddball.
Ooh.
Yes.
Man, this guy's...
Herbie Goes Bananas.
Oh, man.
I forgot about that one.
That is, man, that's a... That's only a sampling, but those
Andy
are
wants this man's SAG card right now. Andy's going to put it up on a post with a scary mask and put it in the woods.
It was produced by Bill Anderson, who produced like a billion different things for Disney. Directed by Vincent McEvity, who also directed many Disney films, including Million Dollar Duck, Gus, Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo, and Herbie Goes Bananas.
All the contemporary of this top ten movie right there.
Yeah, top men. Top men. It stars Robert Foxworth as Jim, Joan Hackett as Laureate, Peter Ustinov as Dr. Snodgrass, who we mentioned, and Vic Morrow as Spangler. And a bunch of that guys and those peoples, including appearances by Jane Wyatt, Dub Taylor, Dick Van Patten drops in, as does George Goober Lindsay.
Yes.
A few other notable names in the credits. We got executive produced by Ron Miller. Assistant to the producer, none other than Mr. Mucci himself, Kevin Corcoran.
Working his way up the ladder.
Absolutely. We got music by Buddy Baker. Some quality music in this
one. Oh, yeah.
A song written by Richard McKinley and Shane Tatum. Performed by Baller, Olsen, Murray, and Haas. So that's who's bringing us the dulcet tunes of Matagumbe.
I look these guys up. They're background singers. So this is an impromptu group. It's not like a Randy Sparks and the Back Porch Majority.
I love they're all vaguely like Nordic.
Yeah.
Mr. Olsen and Mr. Haas. So yeah, a real all-star crew on this one.
Well, this is, you know, we're getting a little deeper into the Disney pantheon. Although I think it's funny, you know, as soon as Disney Plus showed up, I feel like this was prominently featured all the time.
It's one that I was always getting recommended.
Yeah.
Which I thought was always strange.
Maybe Bob Iger really likes it. I don't know. Yeah. But we always point this out, and you know, if you've heard the previews for this movie, a lot of it filmed on location at various places, including the Golden Oak Ranch, but also at Walt Disney World. So kind of rare in that I can't think of another motion picture that was filmed at Walt Disney World until the Hollywood Disney MGM studios. Man. Yeah.
Yeah, the pre-Disney MGM days. This was long before Ernest Saves Christmas. Matagumbe walked so Ernest could run.
There you go. I was trying to think of a good way to put that.
Yeah. So, this was filmed using good old Walt Disney World property as a backlot.
I want to quickly ask if anybody had seen this movie before Disney Plus, and then second question, did you see it at all? Is anybody?
I've seen it as a kid.
Okay.
I never heard of it until you started talking about it. Mm-hmm. On the podcast.
I don't remember seeing it as a kid. I definitely watched it.
I mean, I knew the song because I didn't remember anything about it, but I remembered Matagumbe. Mm-hmm. So that stuck with me over the years, but nothing else did.
And again, I mean, Andy has the Criterion Collection, every pressing of this that's been made, the Laserdisc.
Mm-hmm.
And
with the commentary.
The beta.
There's a film, too, as I
remember. I have the original film, actually. Yes, that's right.
Now, Andy, I'm assuming you have not seen this film.
Yeah, that's a big correct there.
And no doubt you loved it, because this is like the production team. You really celebrate all their work.
You know what? I'm going to come right out and say it. I like this movie.
we were wondering. We felt like it checked a lot of Andy boxes.
It was great, man. I was like, golly, what's going to happen next?
It was a roller coaster. Yeah.
I will say, if you're looking for something unexpected up next, this movie could be for you. Certainly a lot of turns in this one.
Yeah. And high stakes as well.
It's not a good movie, but it's a fun movie, I think.
We're looking at Million Dollar Duck that this director did. Gus, Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo, Apple. Herbie Goes to Bananas. So there's four movies right there that I believe you really loathed. So he finally got one in on Andy.
I didn't loathe Million Dollar Duck.
You were don't put those
words in my mouth.
You gave it. I mean, I looked it up. I was, Million Dollar Duck. You gave it a 1.6. Not bad. High.
Yeah,
but not a one.
1.2 for Gus, so that's pretty low. Yeah.
God, Gus is bad.
Herbie goes bananas 1.25. So
yeah.
We'll see if he can get out of the twos. We'll see if we can break the two ceiling here. And we'll rate this thing for Andy.
All right. Well, with that, we should get into it, I believe. Well, Robert, you are up first. Will you take us into the world of the treasure of Matecumbe?
Burning deep within my soul, a place where men and dreams have vanished. Treasure waits to take its toll. You know I hear you calling to me. Wild bird flying across the moon. All my plans are cloaked in darkness. Seems like tomorrow can't come too soon. You know I hear you calling to me.
You know, sometimes the podcast gods just smile upon me because I was blessed. I guess the only way I could have been blessed more if I didn't have to do an act at all. But to get the first act, I was able to kind of lay out the pathway for what's to come. And then I could sit back and just enjoy the mayhem that ensues. But we begin with a fade up and a nice shaker groove. And the opening credits begin. Jeff, do you want to talk about the opening credit music? Because that's why I picked this movie, because you sang this.
I mean, it's legendary. I mean, it's something. It's, I mean, without equal. And, you know, what I realized is that Toto totally ripped this off for Africa.
Ah, I hear that.
Absolute ripoff. But yeah, it's mysterious, evocative, drawing from, you know, probably some different cultures, you know. I don't know what it has to do with the film, but I love it.
For me, though, we have the, you know, so I watch the Disney Plus version and I get the warning message and I'm like, oh my god,
stories matter.
So, it's like, what are we gonna watch here? And then right out of the gate with that theme song. And it sounds like it should have been like something in Django Unchained, the way it just, especially with what's happening behind the, you know, on the screen. And so I was like, what a song. Even my wife, she's like, that's a pretty good song. I was like,
it is. It really was. It's surprisingly good. Yes.
Very good. Very mysterious. And, you know, you're never going to get a Disney movie in the 70s without that chubby yellow, bright yellow font.
Yes. They love it. What is that font?
They love it everywhere.
We need to talk to our font expert, Todd Naprick. He might be able to shed some light on that one for us. We'll see. But we see a man running across the horizon, looking over his shoulder as if he's being chased. And like I said, we've talked about it. The music, unbelievable. our runner continues as he jogs across landscapes, as our credits fade up and down in our yellow font.
He like, man, this stops. Dude can run. This dude is just over land and sea. He's running.
He finally stops to rest at a fence and looks up to an old manor, or is it a plantation? And a carriage pulls up, and out hops a young boy and two ladies, the eldest noticing that off in the distance a pair of riders are approaching the house. Sheriff Coffey informs them that he's been looking for Ben Woods. Seems Benjamin is on the run, and Ben, whom we presume is the fellow running in the opening credits, hears the conversation, and he scrams. He takes off. The ladies cover, saying that they haven't seen Ben since he left for the war with Captain Burney. Seems the ladies are worried that they'll lose Grassy, the plantation that they live on.
Pretty crappy plantation.
Yeah, it's not much of a
plantation. I like how they make it like visibly shabby.
I thought it was funny when they showed it for the first time, the establishment shot. We got like a sting in the soundtrack, like, bah! It's like, oh, it's alarming. It's just a house.
And I assume that this is taking place in the fall because everything just looks so dry and all the colors are, you know, coming out on the leaves.
Well, it's the 70s too.
I'm wondering if the plantation was in Kentucky. I know they shot in Kentucky considerably. I don't know if this section was Kentucky or not. But
I don't know. Movie tricks. Who knows?
Yeah, they had some trickery there. But as they head inside, we hear some birds calling. Coming from a tree is a young black child named Thad, signaling to Davey, the young child that's with the ladies. And Davey wants to go fishing with Thad, but he had some trouble with his Bible lessons that day and needs to go inside and study it.
Who is Thad?
Thad's the young gentleman in the tree.
Well, I know, but who is he?
Right. That was my question.
Nobody knows.
That's a good question. It's never addressed as to who he is.
Michael, I'm going to, if I may, give you the floor for a little Scamp 101 to talk about Davey's haircut and period drama.
It's the traditional Scamp haircut of the era, as seen on, you know, everyone from Pete and Pete's Dragon to the kid digging through the trash in Santa Claus, the movie. Yeah, yes. It's just the uniform of the era. Always funny in a period film to see the scamp out of time.
I feel like the 70s, they would just always do like bad 70s hair in period films. It's like later on like a perm going on. It's like, come on, y'all.
Right with 70s hair.
Yeah. Are they not even going to try?
Like a lot of the bad dudes look like they were just in some like band.
It's like a roadie's off for Led Zeppelin or something.
Yeah.
Grand Funk Railroad as the bad guys.
Yes. Like we got the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band to be our background players in this. But yeah, everybody's in 70s hair in this movie. And like you said, there's a straight out of Mr. Brady perm coming up.
Major perm.
But the scamp haircut really, it just takes you out of the time.
Hurricane proof perm. Ron That's Miller, why you get a perm. You can survive a hurricane.
I was going to say, Ron Miller must have cut the hair budget there.
He may have just cut the hair himself.
That's right, he cut the hair himself.
Give me a bowl.
He's a good-looking guy.
My research is showing that the first act was shot in central Kentucky on the Mercer County side of Harrington Lake.
On the Mercer County side? Oh,
Harrington Lake. I was suspecting that because I looked it up, like the area they were in. I thought there was a Lake Dix, D-I-X. I thought that's where they were. But it's clearly a lake. But we'll see the lake in a minute. It's
definitely a lake.
Not a river.
That is definitely a lake.
Yeah. So that night, Ben returns and Davies runs out and gives him a big old hug. And he tells Davies that there's treasure out there hidden from this man named Spangler. And Ben says, Spangler, he's the devil himself. So rotten old man. Set that character up nice and quick there. So we're coming right out of the gate here, guys. We're setting up for some adventure. We got some adventure coming our way. This could be good. I'm on board right now. I'm feeling really good about this movie at this point. I mean,
the peril starts almost immediately.
Yeah, they don't waste any time setting up the plot for this movie
or who anybody is. Yeah,
the stakes couldn't be higher.
So Ben comes in. He explains what's going on with the treasure and it's hidden down in Florida. They needed to get the treasure map that he says is stowed away in Grassy. Ben tells him to go up and get the map from Captain Burney's book that he was always reading. And they investigate the book and discover a secret map written in invisible ink.
Davey figures it out, too. Davey's up on his tricks, his scout craft tricks.
Yeah.
I immediately went to the office with Dwight Schrute. You know, he kept trying to make invisible ink gags with the staff there. So Dwight Schrute trick. They suddenly see a silhouette appear in the stained glass, and then without warning, a bunch of goons come crashing through the door.
It's like Kool-Aid Man style.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Spangler and his band of hired goons, and they attempt to barricade the door. The ladies do. They're up in the attic looking at the book, and the door. They barricade the doors. The goons make a very slow approach to the attic, I might say. They just sort of one step and then sort of stop and take another step and give them time to get, you know, barricaded and hold up. So
Spangler's like evil Captain Nemo. He's got his like Captain Nemo outfit on.
It's kind of, it's like Captain, he's like Bill Belichick Captain Nemo.
He needs to cut the sleeves off of his jacket to be Bill Belichick.
Though. Yeah, that's
right. Oh, poor Vic Morrow.
What a terrible
end he had.
Awful.
Do you guys know that story?
No, I don't.
The Twilight Zone movie. John Landis shot with the helicopter. He's holding the two kids and the helicopter. There was an accident and the blade of the helicopter cut his head off and the two kids' heads off.
Gosh.
Yeah, I do. I forgot that was, he was the actor that, that happened to.
Yeah, it's pretty gruesome. Great actor.
Outside, Thad has an escape plan. He's up in a tree, and Davies and Ben go out the window, climbing down the tree. And in what appears to be a missing scene from the Apple Dumpling Gang, the lead goon gets whacked over the head with a frying pan or a pot or something by one of the ladies. And
it's a bed warmer. What they would put like coals in to keep their bed warm. But these ladies are kind of baller. They're like going at it.
Like Aunt ladies. Effie and Aunt Lou.
There you go. Spangler then kicks a guy in the back in the backside, and everyone goes falling forward through the door. So breaking up a very tense moment with needless humor, I might say. So wasn't Spangler's a fan of that.
He's a bad man.
Spangler heads to the open window to see Ben, Thad, and Davies running off. But not before squeezing off a few shots at each of them, catching Ben. Then Ben dies suddenly and tragically in Davy's arms as he hands him the treasure map.
Pretty harsh, straight out of the gate, man.
For real. But I was like, it grabbed my attention. Oh my gosh, they've already killed this guy. Here comes Vic Morrow's Spangler, who's like already a great kind of villain when he first shows up, and they just, you know, they busted through the door and these two old lady. I mean, it was great. It was a great start to the movie.
I mean, the way they bust down the door is still hilarious to me. Then they're just like wailing on these old ladies and then just start shooting after the kids.
With a theme song like that? How can you ask for anything better?
I will say the bad guys are pretty like incompetent at they. You got to leave somebody outside in case somebody runs out the back door. I mean, you got to that. Yeah. And then they kind of just get blown past by these kids. Like, whoa.
Underestimated their opposition.
Exactly.
So the goons give chase, but the boys seek shelter in the barn. You know, the last place anyone would look. Spangler notices a page torn from the book and realizes they have the map now. The boys flee on a horse and hide in plain sight as the goons go by without noticing. They make their way to the river and grab an old rowboat and take off. Spangler says they'll have to come ashore sometime. The next day, Thad and Davy are trying to decide what to do next. They need that treasure to keep the carpetbaggers from getting grassy.
Those darn carpetbaggers.
Yep. They make their way ashore and try to get on a steamboat, flashing a wad to the view. A shady fellow who's helping himself to some water there.
A young Brian James.
No.
You know Brian. He was in Blade Runner. And
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He did look familiar. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy cracks me up. Is like the shadiest leering guy you can imagine. So like the steamship captain is the neighbor from Shaggy D.A., the guy who, like, pretended to be a captain in Shaggy D.A., you know, who lived next door and was their buddy with the flowers. And so he got to be a captain in this one.
Down the hole, Thad is making himself comfortable. He sees a lady hiding in a wedding gown. Just then, a man in a tuxedo is looking for his sister, who he thinks is a stowaway.
This guy. Ugh.
This guy, who was also in the Shaggy DA, is like the TV guy. He was like in a bunch. I feel like he's always like a TV announcer in these movies and like the Dexter Riley movies and stuff. I don't know. He just always seems to be a TV announcer, but this time he got to be Southern.
The boys agree to hide her with the animals and cover for her as her brother and jilted lover search the boat.
Now let's talk about her accent for a second.
Let's talk about her accent.
Yeah.
Because my gosh, that's terrible.
Oh, it's all over the map.
Yes. If anybody's ever seen the movie My Favorite Wife with Cary Grant and Irene Dunne, but there's a scene in it where Irene Dunne pretends to be Southern. And from down Kentucky, from old Kentucky. So she's pretending to be from Kentucky too. It's the exact same accent.
It's
exactly the same. It's ridiculous.
What's going on over here? Huh? It's so bad. I even wrote down my notes. Why is she talking that way?
Like, I thought at first it was like an act.
Yeah,
but it was too. Yeah.
When they finally leave, the bride emerges from a pile of hay and proceeds to remove her veil, storms off as the boat sets off from the dock. The boys stroll around the boat and notice the bride is watching a couple of men gamble and ask if she can lay a bet. And Dick Van Patten explains the rules of the game to her.
Hey, I bet.
She offers to lay down $500. But they doubt she has that kind of money as Dick Van Patten hides the baby card, which is the card you need to find.
I love the baby card. I thought it was so funny. I don't know why he's got two aces and the baby. Like, oh, of course, the well-known baby card. Way to play the baby card. I'd say before this, as they're strolling around the ship, there's some very nice Fort Wilderness grade banjo background music happening on this boat.
Yes.
Really nice, pensive banjo picking going on there. But Dick Van Patten is three card Monte game.
And is the mustachio Dick Van Patten.
That's right.
So Dick Van Patten slowly moves the cards. And she puts her finger on the card and asks him to flip over the other two cards, thus tricking Dick Van Patten at his own game. She makes off with the winnings, part of which is a diamond ring that Dick Van Patten used to pay off his losses. That night, the creepy guy we saw earlier steals Davy's change purse, which he has had all of his money there. He was flashing around, and the map, mind you. And as he runs off, Davy's calls for help, and the bride confronts him only to get tossed overboard. Then Davy and Thad go in after her only to get sucked in under the paddle wheel and nearly drowned.
I was trying to figure how they did all this, because a lot of things seem to be like a model boat maybe, but then there's, I guess, maybe some rear projection going on. I don't know. There's a lot of things going on back and forth. And
I was wondering about that too. There was like one scene where it looked like the top of the boat was a matte painting over the miniature.
Interesting looking
thing.
It was a weird mix of different stuff, which I guess is the way to do it, because then you never figure out what's going on.
Right.
So on the shore the next morning, the lady is behind the bushes while the boys sulk that they lost their treasure map. She emerges in her underwear, startling the boys. They're trying to cover their eyes. She's wearing, like, you know, period underwear, which is basically, you know,
Bloomers,
yeah.
What you doing? Look at me. How about you look?
Sorry, I was channeling another friend of ours who has a thick Southern accent.
It's like the equivalent of, like, James Vanderbeek's terrible accent
in Varsity Blues. I also remember, Michael, it reminds me of the lunch lady at Marion that would always go, What you want?
Lunch lady Doris?
It wasn't lunch lady Doris, yeah.
After she gets dressed, the boys spill their plan of treasure and they're making their way to Florida. Just then, a gentleman approaches in a wagon and Laureate flashes her diamond ring from her gambling earnings, suggests she's loaded and she wants to buy the dim-witted gentleman's mule and cart.
And that guy,
saying
they
she
really cornered the market on sort of like leering, creepy, random extras in this movie.
Yeah, it's like every new character, I'd be like, what's up with this person? Like in their real life, this is really so strange. That guy was no exception. It's like, where did they find that guy at like the bar? Like, where was he? Like, to hell with it. Oh, you should be in our movie.
She tells the creepy cart owner she needs to offer some sort of collateral. She doesn't have any cash on her. Next thing we know, they're pulling into town on their new wagon. Or new to them, I guess. They make their way to the sheriff, who's having a quick tug on a whiskey bottle. Why, it's George Goober Lindsay, folks, having a drink.
Yay! With quite a haircut.
Dude. Yeah. There's a 70s haircut for you.
Yeah, but what was... didn't even get a haircut. He was trying out the sheriff's chair. The old Goober trying the sheriff's chair for once and failing miserably.
She wants to ditch the boys with the sheriff because she thinks they're runaways.
That was a turn.
Yeah, it was a turn. I did not expect this. She's such a narc. Like for a long time, she's such a narc. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I was like, okay, this is cool. She's like, hey, you boys saved me. I'm your buddy now. And then all of a sudden pulled that move. And I was like, oh, that's cold.
Did not expect that betrayal for sure.
So Goober puts them in protective custody as Laureate is scheming something now. Just then we hear Thad yelling that he's been bitten by a spider. Goober goes looking for it. And Davey kicks him in the pants and runs out, locking Goober in the cell. Take it off.
This town looks like something that was in like Apple Dumpling Gang.
Oh, very similar. Oh, yeah, for sure. I was thinking that too.
So Laureate isn't happy that her scheme got upended. She pulls off in her wagon, and then we suddenly see Spangler. He's hot on the trail. The boys head down to the river and find a snake oil salesman on a boat. He's making elixir of swamp root. It's good for consumption, king's evil, gout, goiter, scurvy, carbuncles, dyspepsia?
Dyspepsia.
And general skin disorder. So it covers a lot of bases here, including king's evil.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but...
I don't either. I feel like maybe one of you guys knew. Davey asks if he's heading down the river and needs to get to Friar's Point. He offers them an apprenticeship wage and introduces himself as Ewing T. Snodsgrass.
Great name.
Yeah, gets, really quality.
And my next note, great name. Amazing. Yes, has the title of MCP... M-P-H-U.
It's MCP. That's telling.
I don't know.
End of line.
The boys accept, and old Snodgrass shoves off, and we crossfade into Act 2.
Tell your tales and sing your songs up the creeks and down the bayous. Everyone knows that it won't be long till the next man dies of trying to find you. Island lost in a lonely sea, reaching across an endless ocean. Feel your mystery calling me back where the sea is the only motion.
We We cut to Dr. Snodgrass with a headdress and buffalo horns. And the two kids are flanking him. They are also dressed in war paint and headdresses and all kinds of various regalia.
This is why they have the warning message.
Stories matter, guys. Stories matter.
I was like, all right, what's it going to be in this movie that earns the warning message? But it's like, they're not... I mean, they're doing something that is like obviously meant to be like wrong. You know, it's not like the movie's like, this is good. It's like, hey, look at these guys. They're doing this goofy thing.
I think the stories matter moment is later.
Yes.
Well, this took a racist turn, and yeah, no, it's coming later.
It's later.
So this is, yeah, they are. The all-seeing eye is mocking them for being foolish and being this way. Not the kids. Kids are just unwilling pawns in this scheme of his. He says an opening incantation. I mean, you know, Peter Ustinov is just... He could read the phone book for me. His voice. I would just talk all the time.
Yes!
Absolutely. So interesting.
He's really chewing up the scenery, too. I mean, he just makes the most of every line he's given.
He does. Yes.
I love, especially when they give him, like, nonsense stuff to say.
Yeah.
And he can make these, like, weird noises.
Sid Caesar or something.
He makes the most insane noises.
So, yeah, his opening incantations in the Choctaw tongue and dedicated to the great chief, Wawatusi, that the Choctaw were to be credited for his constitution.
But he says it like, wah, wah.
Yeah. Wah, wah, doozy. He's selling trusses to the people, and the kids are to put them on the people and adjust them. And these trusses say Snodgrass Fever Ague and Liver Pad, which I really want one of these. Where is this in the Disney archives? Can I get one?
You know they've got to have one in the archives.
And just wear it around all the time?
Because it's like, just like a little... It just sort of perches on your sternum.
Or like a lederhosen, or like the top of a lederhosen.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You should be able to buy that at that little store right outside the Country Bear Jamboree. I mean,
that's a good idea.
Brilliant. Yes.
Absolutely.
Dr. Snodgrass says the citizens of Boskydale, which is a great name, are all far sicker than they think. Well, the lady, Laureate, sees the kids involved in this business and goes to get the sheriff, who is played by Dub Taylor.
Yeah. I
love a Dub Taylor cameo.
Hubba Bubba.
Yes, Hubba Bubba, exactly.
Also from the Andy Griffith Show.
Can you drive this flivver?
Mm-hmm. Laureate explains what's happening, and the sheriff asks if the name of the man was Snodgrass. He says, I've been waiting on that slick boot. And he leaves Laureate. She asks if she could trade her mule and cart in for a steamship ticket and a dress. And the man quickly answers all three queries. But my favorite answer was, if you want to get on the steamship, you need to go down to the river and start a fire like everyone else. Sometime it stops, sometime it don't.
So I was like, that's a fascinating insight in how things work. I didn't know that.
Historical.
That's helpful info.
That's right. Research.
Yeah, research. Research pays off. Yet again, though, she's being such a narc. Why?
Yeah. Such a narc. What is her motivation?
I don't know. She's like, trying out of her way to like tattle.
I think in this, she's trying to help the kids because they've like, I don't know, gotten into this guy. I don't know.
Fallen in with bad company, maybe.
Well, just like that, the sheriff's off to find Snodgrass. We cut back to Snodgrass, who's selling eyeglasses at this point. The sheriff finds him and says he sold him an electric belt last year that was supposed to restore male vigor, and all he got was a case of hives. Which is the best line of the movie for me. Male vigor. Oh, man.
Good sheriff's stuff. Giving off Farmer Fran from the Waterboy vibe at this point.
Yeah.
You had to pay another day.
No, I think that's just Dub Taylor. I think he's kind of like the same character.
He's not acting. Yeah.
I mean, he's the same here as he was in Back to the Future 3.
Mm-hmm. Exactly the same.
In the Hubba Bubba commercials. Mm-hmm. He calms the sheriff down, Dr. Snodgrass, it is, with the liver pad and is soon checking his vision, manages to con him again into thinking he needs glasses. Dad runs up and acts like Davy's back is broken, and Snodgrass takes off with an audience in tow. So this is another con. Davy's playing like he's out, as every child actor can't act like they're unconscious. So neither can Davy in the movie. And he is going to drink the dreaded Spooju juice, which should be the cocktail's name, right?
At yes, absolutely.
While this is going on, he's trying to act like he can revive him and fix ailments. But old Spangler and his men pull up. Old Spangler Belichick.
Spangler. Oh, I wish Bill Belichick had a son named Spangler. Here's my son, Spangler.
This is a twist. Davy, you know, sees them and just goes back out, which I thought was funny. He just acts like he's just playing possum, which gets Snodgrass panicking. At the same time, Laureate shows up and busts up the whole charade. Davy runs off, and Spangler and his men go in pursuit of him and somehow, like, immediately lose him on horseback. They're like, where did he go?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a kid running away. Like, maybe you took a long time to get on your horses. I don't know. Well, finally, they do catch Davy in the woods, and this is pretty menacing stuff.
Yeah.
Spangler's a mean-looking dude. They march him back over to a ledge, over a lake.
Silently, though. Silently in your face. It should be in, like, 3D.
Yeah, 3D. It's like a magic journey all of a sudden. Yes,
exactly.
Spangler says, you have something I want. But Laureate has snuck up on them with a gun and holds them up. So she can't quit them. Spangler says the boy has taken something away from him and he just wants it back. To that, Laureate shoots at their feet and makes them walk up to the ledge. And after shooting again, two of the men jump into the lake. All very strange. Nitty-gritty and don't want to get wet.
From the shores of beautiful Harrington Lake in Mercer County.
Right. Please travel to Kentucky. Laureate says to Spangler, now you jump, you Yankee, you defile this land.
Ugh.
He. After some glaring... Is that, say, Spangler's a good glarer. He could have been in the Moon Spinners. but he jumps in with a look out below, which I thought was a little
look out below
for the occasion. Geronimo.
Yeah.
It was like it was added later, like the Darth Vader. No, when they put Empire on like DVD and added in. No, it's not Darth Vader. It's Luke screaming when he falls on Cloud City. They added in this yell. It's kind of like that.
Look out below.
I love how he like ceremoniously seeds his riding crop before he jumps or his little stick. I don't know what it is. It's not a riding crop. It's just a little menacing stick he carries. Yeah.
It's imagine like a ultimate Disney fighting game, and you can choose Spangler, and that's the weapon he comes armed with.
Kind of like Smash Brothers kind of thing. Yeah,
right. That would be incredible.
Call this my whipping stick.
We cut to Snodgrass's keelboat sailing down the river. Now, this keelboat is incredible. It has a sail attached to the top. It really should be on the rivers of America.
It is a deluxe model. It's nice.
I don't understand why it's not, yeah.
Laureate believes the boys now, finally. I guess it only took, you know, almost getting killed. And she says that Davy needs to find their uncle to help them. We hear a few tall tales about Davy's uncle. And we cut to another scene where Snodgrass is approaching a crowd at night. Well, it just so happens it's the Klan, and they're about to lynch Uncle Jim. What a coincidence.
Oh, my word.
Guys,
it's a real twist. Goes,
oh, no.
I did not see this coming.
Me neither. I love how they reveal it by just, like, smash cut to the guys lighting up the cross. It's like, oh, this is what's going on. Now,
oh Lord, a lynching.
It was one of the few most shocking moments of the movie, and the fact that it wasn't clearly the most says something, because we've got some more to come.
Oh,
but yeah, this was the first of the huge, like, whoa, okay.
But I love how it starts off of, like, I don't know which way this is going to go. This could go wrong in several ways.
Yes.
But it winds up going incredibly right.
Yes.
In the best possible way.
And I want to say, like, I don't know what's in the book, but this movie feels like it was written over a series of three martini lunches to me. It's like, what could happen now? Oh, we got to get to the Klan. Okay, let's do the Klan now. Whatever. I'll have a prime rib. Then another martini. Keep them coming.
I love how they, like, found the middle ground between... They spent so much time talking about those darn carpetbaggers and the Yankees defiling the land. But then it's almost like it says, yeah, but we're not so far that we're into the Klan.
Right.
The Klan, yeah, the Klan is still bad.
The Klan's still bad. Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, what a coincidence. Davey meets Uncle Jim, says it's nice to meet you, kid. I'd tip my hat, but I'm kind of tied up right now. Do a noose.
I couldn't believe this was a Disney movie. Like, wait, what?
I couldn't believe this was a movie at this point.
By all rights, Uncle Jim should have been Bill Bixby, though.
He should have. He absolutely should have been. And everything 80 yard. I'm kind of tied up right now.
I will say, though, I recognize Uncle Jim from something, and he was an evil admiral on a Deep Space Nine two-parter.
Okay.
Where he was, like, selling out the Federation, or, like, just kind of selling out the liberties of the Federation and got busted.
Yeah, I was looking at his acting career earlier. I saw that, too, yeah.
He's been in, like, a ton of stuff, though.
Yeah.
A ton of stuff.
He's a voice actor, wasn't he?
Yeah, also, yeah.
I think he did Transformers. He's Ratchet.
Yeah, he's Ratchet in Transformers.
Yes.
Yeah. But he has this golden perm in this one.
It's glorious.
Kind of curly.
Yeah. Nothing can stop that perm. It truly is perm.
Not even the Klan.
Right. Not the Klan, not a hurricane. Anyway, in all the hubbub, somehow Davey gets a gun and shoots the rope that was tying Uncle Jim up. I mean, what a shot.
That was a nice shot. That was a good one.
Lauriette, for her part, says they'll hang Davey over her dead body, to which a Klansman says, if that's what you want. Well, Dr. Snodgrass has now have every kind of firebomb imaginable, starts throwing Molotov cocktails all over the place, and the Fellowship escapes as the Klan runs off. They rendezvous and head back to the kill bed.
This may be the best scene in any Disney movie ever. Peter Ustinov, like, shouting Peter Ustinovy things while he firebombs the Klan.
It's pretty great.
There are a lot of shots of just Klan people just blowing up. I'm down for this.
Scream in there too, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't hear the Wilhelm scream, I'm sure.
It's like, I heard all Nazis.
That, you know, they have the Pirates of the Caribbean gunshots. I couldn't believe they didn't have the whiny dog from the Pirates of the Caribbean. But, I mean, this should be captured for meme opportunities, right?
Totally.
Unfortunately.
much pyro. So many, like, dudes set on fire. Right. More dudes set on fire than probably any other Disney movie.
Yeah.
It's a lot of dudes. It's all the Klan, so it's all good.
Yeah, it's great. Nobody minds setting the Klan guys on fire.
That's what I'm saying. It's like shooting Nazis. You're like, all right. Yeah, cool.
You're like, all right.
Well, Uncle Jim is putting together a plan. He offers a share of the proceeds to Snodgrass, and Snodgrass says no. He says even if they find the treasure, Spengler will find them and take it from them, which is savvy. The plan, nonetheless, is to head to New Orleans and then over to Tampa, like you do. And so the Fellowship continues on with Davey playing a mournful version of Shenandoah as the rest of the crew looks on.
I loved it. I want the soundtrack.
You like a good mournful harmonica, Michael.
Oh, I do. I do. Gives me those Blue Bayou feelings.
Especially if a child is playing it.
Yes, with a scamp haircut.
It would be nice to have the soundtrack to this one, for sure. Yeah, so, wow. It's just a real, here we go. We're continuing on. Laureate goes and finds Uncle Jim. I mean, subplot, I guess.
Yeah.
Trying to. Why he didn't ask her to go along, too. He said she wouldn't fit in, and goes off on how her finery would go to waste in the swamps. And all of this is said with a grin of like, I'm going to get her upset at me, because this is funny.
I'm a rascal.
She goes offended, and he laughs. Just another weird interaction, people to people. Laureate comes out with some mullet puree and wants Uncle Jim to try it. He says, just give it to Davy. If he likes it, you know it's a success. To which Laureate disappears and slams the pots and pans with some really great Foley. I missed my decade. What did she put in it? Do Foley. I don't know. Mullet puree. Ugh. Gosh. The crew comes to a dock where a very large number of glaring men stand around glaring.
Man, this is so intense.
So many dead-eyed yokels in this movie.
Shot after shot, wide shot, close shot, medium shot, close shot, wide shot, glaring. Love a good glare.
These guys, well, there was plenty of it.
There's a lot.
Yes.
To which, I mean, what did they have to get out for?
He went and got stuff. Explain to me why they stopped.
I don't know.
He said he needed supplies.
Supplies?
Like that, he goes and gets a box of stuff, but I don't know what it is. Why would
you have to do it right there?
And he's clueless, too. He's like, hey, guys, how's it going? Big gulps, like,
tie up to the landing for a minute?
I love how, he's like, mind if we tie up? Silence. And I love how it's like Davy, you know, you want to go. Davy says, no, thanks. Like, that's a good no thanks, Davy.
Well, he heads up the dock, Uncle Jim, that is. It's all the men keep staring at Snodgrass and Davy. Well, Snodgrass gets out a banjo. He says, music cures everything. Davy grabs a harmonica, and Thad starts a dancing.
Oh my, this 180 degrees another turn.
Did not expect it to turn into Seven Brides for Seven Brothers all of a sudden, which is what it does.
Yeah, well, so on the dock,
the high stepping my jaw hit the floor.
We haven't got to the high stepping yet. We get an old man hears the music and he starts shuffling along with Dad. It's just shucking and jiving, man. Oh man, this is something. Well, then, we get all kinds of crazy, rough-hewn men dancing. Why was this such a thing back then? Because it definitely was. Like, let's do horseplay dancing and jump over each other. Let's have a barn raising. Yeah. One of the glaring men says, hey, Curly, grab your screech box and let's show them how it's really done.
It's like an episode of Hee Haws just happened right in the middle of this movie.
So funny to me. Like doing backflips. And just like the guy who did the backflips then immediately starts like kind of clogging, but like really doing like really small movements. And it's just.
I like the guys that do the synchronized like muscle arm flexing. Like, we are strong. We are strong.
It's like something that would be on one of those weird TV specials we watch in the summer from the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Or something you'd see at Dollywood.
Yes.
Yeah.
Laureate gets gussied up because she's excited. She comes out to see what's going on. I mean, all of a sudden, she's just like super desperate, even though she was running away from men earlier.
Yeah.
But now they're like making her out into being super desperate.
Yeah.
She goes... we'll see with the man dancing. She says to Uncle Jim, I didn't know you were having a party. And Uncle Jim says, these are flatboatmen and nobody to trifle with. Go back inside. Too late, because they start asking her to dance and it gets predictably out of hand quickly. And then, of course, we have the requisite fight after too much fun is had, as Uncle Jim tries to free Laureate from a grabby man. And some truly poor-looking fight acting by Uncle Jim here. I mean, it's also like, Uncle Jim can beat up 50 people at the same time. He really is amazing. Well, a lot of the longboatmen do crazy pratfall falls in the water as the boat pulls away, and they're off to safety.
Man, and like the banjo smash on the head.
Yeah, the gentle smash of a banjo
by Peter Ustinov. That was just great. It's like, donk.
I'll say Uncle Jim is last to leave the dock. He gets everybody on the boat, and then they start sailing off. And then he leaps to the boat. But, man, he about didn't make it.
He didn't. It like I had, like, phantom pains in my shin for
yes, right?
If he had missed.
He totally. He can do it all, though. You shouldn't doubt him. Well, later, Thad goes up to Davy and asks him if he's in love with Miss Paxton, Laureate, that is. Which, you know, kids. He says he thinks she loves him because they hug so long at Friar's Point. Thad says if you get a glass of water and put a lady's hand in it, she'll tell you the name of her sweetheart. It just so happens that she's napping right now.
Also make her wet her pants.
That's right. That's what I thought it would do. To begin this quest, we see Spangler and his men on their boat, and they found Snodgrass's boat.
Hold your speed.
The kids get the pan of water and put Laureate's hand in it, and she says, "We're sinking! We're sinking!" Well, that completely random episode gets them out of the boat on the boat deck where they notice Spangler and head for the woods. Spangler and his men land and take off in hot pursuit. Uncle Jim leads the men on further as a decoy and gets Snodgrass to take the rest onto the steamboat that Spangler has, which is faster. And it really has heavy Captain Duck vibes, this steamboat.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot of Captain Duck vibes in this movie in general.
That's true. That's true.
To come. But yeah, the steamboat sure does.
Snodgrass sets his own keelboat on fire, which, I mean, it seemed drastic. Davy has a great protest to them leaving Uncle Jim. But, I mean, we shouldn't doubt that Uncle Jim will make it somehow, some way. Snodgrass is trying to learn how to drive the steamboat. Keeps blowing the whistle for some reason, which, you know, Spangler and his men come back, try to shoot the steamboat and do a pretty good job of it because he's blowing the whistle. And they jump on the keel boat, which explodes. Twist.
That's a pretty good explosion, too.
What?
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah.
And as Davy mourns Jim giving himself up, Spangler growls from the shorelines.
I love that growl, too.
That.
Is that what he gives up? Does he shake his fist there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
With that foil, where are we off to now? Tampa. With that, we end.
You know, Snodgrass gives a good line. He says, "The menace of Spangler is ever present."
I
wrote that one down. That was a good one.
He's so good. Oh, he's so good.
He's amazing. Yes.
I love how he, like, before he blows up his boat, he, like, kind of gives a little pat and is like, "I'm sorry."
Yeah.
Like, that's totally what I would have been to, like, do. I'm like, "I'm sorry, I'm about to blow you up." Anyway, we find ourselves in New Orleans, the big sleazy. A dandy fellow is out dancing a jig on the street as we hear some good New Orleans square music from Disneyland. And we see Laureate emerging from the local police station. Apparently, they've been looking for signs of Uncle Jim, but have had no luck. So the gang goes to lunch at a fancy restaurant with bonbons aplenty. The doctor says he's putting the boys on a ship going north, says they should go home. put themselves in the hands of the local authorities until the threat of Spengler has been eliminated. And Lariat agrees, and the doctor, he just tells Davies, like, you've got to let it go, man. You got to let it go.
I just wish they could have waited longer in New Orleans with Dr. Snodgrass in New Orleans. I would like more.
Oh, I know.
Oh, that's a movie right there. Just there Snodgrass. Go. That's all it's called. Snodgrass.
A weekend in New Orleans
with
Dr. Snodgrass. So Davy and Thad say no dice. They're not giving up on their little quest. And so they start to say their goodbyes. They're like, well, we'll see you around. But Lariat stops them, says she'll go with them, and then the doc throws in too. To avoid Spengler, they head inland away from the river, the mighty Mississippi. But all is not well, as Tom Petty has been spying on
yes!
them.
Yes! I made the same note.
I did too.
I'm like, oh, it's Tom Petty.
With a little bit of Matthew McConaughey in there.
Yeah. Tom Petty's been spying on him and reporting to Spengler. He spotted the gang taking the Yulee Railroad inland to Tampa, as you do. So we find ourselves on the shores. We jump all the way to Bay Lake, where a canoe is pulling up to a dock, which kind of looks like it should be like a tiki bar or something. I don't know what was very Floridian about this. More exotic.
Yeah, that's anyway. Very strange.
Strange indeed. Snodgrass has been doing recon around and about. We never actually see Tampa, but he's been in Tampa. And apparently the local reverend says no one matching the description of Spengler has been seen in Tampa.
He would know.
The reverend is really plugged in, I suppose, to know everyone who is in Tampa at that time. A small town, I guess. Their guide for the canoe expedition, which they're getting ready to go on, is the same guy who inherited the kids in the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Yeah.
Yes. The Cockney Florida guide.
Hooligan. He's playing very much the exact same role here. He's very grimy.
Yeah, he couldn't have been too healthy. I mean, he could have been... Yeah, I don't know.
Just in general.
His character's name was Skaggs, too.
Yeah, good name.
Very
good
fitting.
Name. Very fitting. He just seemed yellowed in every way possible.
So yellowed. His eyes seem yellowed.
Smelled like urine, probably.
Probably. Well, it's kind of implied at some point. Lariat makes a comment about his smell. So they head off into the Everglades full of B-roll of frolicking animals.
God, grainy B-roll, the worst.
Yeah, some nice old 8mm B-roll from True Life Adventures, I'm sure. They paddle through the mangroves. They see some out-of-focus egrets. And Lariat makes it clear she doesn't trust the hobo guide man. She keeps taking, like, shots at him. And I'm like, you know, lady... Just keep it to yourself, as he is your guide, and bad things can happen if you just keep insulting him.
I was thinking at this, I thought she was just being a B, because I was like, all right, it's too obvious that this guy is crooked.
Yeah,
and so they wouldn't do that. And so I was like, oh, she's just, you know, just being mean just to be mean or whatever.
No, because she is just like relentless.
Yeah.
And then a double twist turns out. So they paddle through Fort Wilderness until they run into an audio animatronic Seminole.
Oh my gosh.
With the bird on his
shoulder. Stories matter, guys. Stories matter.
He's not doing anything. He's just standing there with a bird on his shoulder.
Yeah, just hanging out with his bird on his shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah. Representation matters too. And this guy was played by Valentin de Vargas.
Oh, I meant to look up to see who they had to play this guy.
Yeesh.
The guy stares at them silently as they pass, but when they look again, huzzah, he's gone.
Wow, that's magical. Noble savage.
Magical.
It's Tonto.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I just much love how this guy just appears out of nowhere and is just standing stock still.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like a not even audio animatronic, just like a statue.
Right. Just a tronic.
Just a tronic. Meanwhile, in the 1950s, an alligator swims somewhere underwater.
This is like so jarring, all this B-roll.
Wiki-watchy footage.
In Thunderball.
Right?
Yes. Oh, man.
So I wanted to say, it starts, the third act feels like a James Bond movie to me. It does. There's a lot of James Bond. There's a lot of Live and Let Die coming.
Oh, yeah. A lot of
Thunderball. Yeah, that's a good call. It's something. Something.
The guide tells the crew to keep their hands out of the water because it's gator country. To prove his point to the doubting kids, they're like, oh, good for the gators. He makes a bizarre noise, yes. Which has the effect of making sped up footage of alligators play.
Never do this to a family of gators.
It's like, it goes like this. And then, yeah, it makes alligator footage speed up when you do that.
The music cues are just, also in the third act, music cues just constantly stinging like, bah, bah, bah.
Yeah.
Ratcheting up the tension.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So we get more alligator antics along with footage of other critters. And the gang starts to get sweaty as they get deeper into the swamp. It's stagnant. It's dank. A hobo guide man sees a handkerchief tied to a tree, says, oh, I think it's time we turn left. But the doc expects, he knows something's up. He's like, south is in the other direction. And the guide's like, yeah, that's a good eye. But like that way is blocked, so we got to go left. It's really slick talk that's not very convincing, but they buy it anyway. So they pull over. He's like, we got to pull over here to refill our water supplies. The last water for 50 miles. And Davey goes to help him as he goes off to get it, only to run straight into Spangler and his lackeys. Dun-dun-dun.
Ba-da, ba-da, ba-da.
So, Mr. Davey, again, there is nothing you have I cannot take away. Everybody files out of the canoe except for Laureate, who's like, no, I'm not going anywhere. So Spangler gives her like a good taunting. He's like, you defile this boat, blick, blick, blue. And then drags her out of the boat.
Oh, man, he pulls her straight out, doesn't he?
He's like, yeah, he does. Yeah. Like pop that arm out of the socket.
It for a second, it looks like the actress is kind of like, ouch, kind of a reaction to being drug out.
Surprise. Yeah. So Spangler asks Davey for the map. And Davey talks some smack back and gets clocked.
That's so good.
Spangler just whomps him.
Truly, truly evil man.
Yeah, really.
On a kid. Like, come on.
Evil in a way that like they rarely are in these movies.
His eyes get more reddened as the movie goes on. It's like his body's succumbing to the dark side.
It's not a backhand. Usually you see like a backhand to the kid. Sometimes. It's slap. A straight up this punch. Right punch.
Yep. Yeah.
Just right. Boom. Clocks him.
And so far, I will say, like, Davey has played his cards surprisingly well, considering the scamp character. This is a first miscalculation, I feel like. And he paid the price.
Like,
he fooled around and found out
in that moment. Yeah, exactly. Well, Spangler threatens him some more. Spangler's got a gun in their face. You know, Laureate says, you know, Davey, tell him what you remember. Spangler is getting ready to shoot someone. And the doctor intervenes, says, I made a copy of the map, which he did make a copy of the map by stitching it into his handkerchief, which I thought was an innovative little handicraft that we didn't know about. They could sell these in the store by the Country Bears. Little hankies with the map in them.
To wipe the sweat away.
Exactly. So Spangler takes the map and tells his guys to cast off, take both canoes. They're leaving our heroes behind. And the guy's like, oh, you're not going to starve to death. Them skeeters are going to get you. Hobo guy even steals Doc's hat to add insult to injury. It's just awful. So the baddies paddle off, leaving our heroes to watch footage of an otter being bothered by special effects flies.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
These flies. Ugh.
The same special effects have invaded their campsite where they sit around a smoking fire trying to, you know, get the smoke to clear them out, swatting frantically at what turns out to be mosquitoes. Very loud buzzing mosquitoes.
Is that what it's like down there, Michael?
That's pretty much every day you run the risk of walking into a mosquito storm. It is so dense you can't even see through them. And they are really, our little fellowship is really having an episode here. Flailing around and yelling and just going kind of mental.
And what is the point of this?
Yeah, is this really necessary? I mean, no.
The bugs have like gotten through Davy's shirt and are like eating him. He's like all bloody. And Lariette like goes mad and tries to run away. And the doctor's like, no, they'll get in your lungs and you'll choke to death on mosquitoes.
Love this. This is great.
Pretty intense. At all it needed was somebody like falling into quicksand or something.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Finally, it starts to rain. Which makes the special effects go away, but makes more special effects appear because it's special effects rain. It's a combo of special effects rain and real rain. Like in some shots, there's like rain pouring off their hats, and in other, their hats are like strangely dry as the rain appears in front of the camera.
And then in some shots, it's like someone has a garden hose and just shooting water sideways right at them.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah. Combination of effects were used. Out of nowhere, Thad starts hearing someone singing. Turns out that not only is Jim alive, but he's pals with the audio animatronic Indian, and they're canoeing to the rescue.
Of course he is.
Jim says they're going to try and beat Spangler to the treasure, but first he and Lariette have to fight and flirt a little, just to get that out of the way. The rain stops, and everyone is paddling along happily, until we get a very hardcore zoom onto a painted tribal mask.
Well, they like the zooms in this movie. They've used it a lot now.
Yeah, yeah. This one, though. This one is special. This one had me rolling.
Yeah. I thought about you a lot when this kept going on.
All these masks. Like if I had directed a Disney movie in the 70s, it would probably look a lot like this, probably.
But the second, I mean, there's like the first one, and then there's a second one that's like yes. Moving
the second
on like
one.
A blue screen. That's the one I thought of you.
It's so good.
It needs to be like, have a sound like. Then it would be totally you. What is that? It's like floating in front of a blue screen. With like woods going behind it. What is it?
Just like hovering. Like I thought it was going to pull back to reveal like it was on a person.
Right. Otherwise, what's the explanation? I guess they were like trying to establish some kind of depth of field, but it just looks like it's floating.
It's like floating.
But it's so bizarre. I mean, it's like Trader Sam. I mean, it's like what?
It is.
Why is it this African
kind of male understanding? It is like South Seas cannibal from like Swiss Family Robinson or something.
It is a really incongruent.
And like one of them I'm pretty sure is Japanese. Like well, yeah. It's like a yeah, Japanese absolutely. Like Oni demon.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. There's a couple that look very Asian later. Yes.
Yes.
Just switch to Oceanic Arts and we're like, I'll just take whatever you got.
But they got like little pointy teeth. It's like half Jungle Cruise, half Tiki Room.
It's really amazing. It's another another significant plot twist.
Yes, really. Oh, I did not see this one coming.
No.
I'm so glad you called out the second one, though, because that is... Oh, that's my favorite.
It should be so your good. Screensaver, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely my screensaver and like background animation. So all of this signifies a tribe that's not the Seminole, or is part of the Seminoles, but it's like basically Charlie, who is the animatronic Indian. His name is Charlie.
Of course.
He explains that these guys are nobody's friends. Nobody likes these guys. The Seminoles are not a big fan of this crew and their masks. So Moore zooms in on the masks and everybody's nervous, even the birds.
This is the Rutland of the
right. Seminoles. Yes, exactly. Chief Shelby Ashton.
That's right.
We get some random B-roll birds just to remind us birds are a thing. And they go on just like a beat too long. Because there's one of like a shot of Lariat sort of gazing at them. And then a shot of like flamingos just sort of silently like gliding.
Yeah.
And apparently all the birds means there's a hurricane coming.
Naturally.
Of course.
You know how we know it.
And Lariat's like, it's very quiet.
They should have had Charlie tell you that. I think. Well, I guess they kind of do, don't they?
Yeah, he's says, like hurricane.
Yeah. But he says Charlie's not wrong. Bird's not wrong.
Yeah, Charlie's not wrong. Bird's not wrong.
Oh my gosh,
Kimosabi.
Give Charlie a little something to work with, man. It's just brutal.
I know Charlie doesn't have to be along for any of this. I'll point out. I don't know why he's. Because there's a lot of white people nonsense coming up that I don't know what Charlie's having anything to do with or why.
He should have given them directions and saved Jim and been on his way.
So, see you later. So hurricanes come in. The adults say, well, you've got to stop the chase long enough to take shelter from the hurricane. And the doctor's like, it's no good if we wind up on the bottom of the ocean, which I would agree with.
Yeah,
but
sound logic. Yes.
Kids are lying. Nah, Davey's like, no dice. We got to beat Spangler. Spangler will get there before us, so we've got to go. So then there's like this really prolonged, odd moment of silence, where it's just like quiet, and then Jim's like, "Okay, yes, we can outpaddle the hurricane." It's a real weird moment.
I'm thinking.
Be quiet. I'm thinking. So they start paddling and the wind begins to blow. Well, apparently hurricanes come on fast because as night falls, they are struggling to keep afloat. The wind and rain is blowing.
Oh, man. I want to know what the electricity bill for this shoot was.
For this, real.
They are throwing some serious fans.
I don't know how many engines they had to drag out to Bay Lake to make these weather effects happen.
It is crazy.
It is intense. Like full-size trees just like blowing sideways.
Yeah, what on earth?
And they're all out in the middle of it.
Then the waves.
The waves. It's
time to dig for treasure.
Oh my gosh. These actors, they earned their paycheck right here because they were just getting hammered.
Yeah. I want to know more about how this was filmed because there's a lot of like practical stuff going on that is crazy.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out either. I was trying to make sense of it.
There was Charlie gets hit by a tree when they're walking up to it. I mean, it's like, how did they do that? How
about that?
Yes. That looks awful.
It's like they just drop a tree on it.
It looks so painful. I mean, like, how could that not be real?
Right, I don't know. Because it's not fake. It's like a tree, a real tree.
Was it an accident? I don't know. They're like, Charlie, you okay? It's like,
Charlie, I'm fine. Bird's fine.
Yes.
We get some footage of waves rolling in. Some B-roll footage of waves.
Giants.
They're like, oh, because all along they've been looking for, you know, they had this map that had five trees on it. But it's like... On Matacumbe Key, you know, there are five trees. So, of course, there are 10 billion trees on this island. But then they see five trees that are out on the beach.
It just didn't look distinct enough. Is it like a place, a landmark?
And the way that, the waves coming in are not just like regular waves. It's like something from like Hawaii or like South Africa.
Yes. Yes.
Huge, huge waves.
Like huge curling waves.
20-foot waves. I mean, is it really? Do we really think Spangler's going to be out there digging for it in this? No. Do we?
Can That's we why. Do what is the rush?
Yeah.
Like, poor I mean, planet. It's hard to think about how, like, trying to dig a hole on a regular beach when the tide is coming in.
Right.
And you can't do that. Now, do it in hurricane. No, that's not going to happen. This is insane. This whole thing is insane to me. It's
totally unhinged.
We get footage of waves rolling in. They see the trees that have been drawn on the map. They're like, well, this is clearly where we're supposed to dig. They're barely able to walk along the beach in the wind. And they've like got their shovels and are like tromping through the beach, like leaning into the wind and rain. It's totally bananas. It's ridiculous. And then the place they intend to dig has B-roll of like Hawaii 5-0 waves washing like straight over it. It like cuts away, and it's like the surfing movie from That Darn Cat.
What was that guy's name with the pipe?
Oh, Canoe.
Canoe.
Yeah. Canoe would love this. So, this is when a tree falls on Charlie, but he's fine. He's fine. He just shakes it off. I'm like, okay, I'm all right. And they start digging in the lightning and knee-deep water. They just kind of randomly pick places on... It's like a featureless beach. So, like, I'll just dig here. More big kahuna waves are washing in, courtesy of B-roll. They dump a ton of water on the actors. This is the Captain Duck. Like, Captain Duck coming in hard here.
Totally.
And he totally wipes out Davy and Thad. And they are getting tossed around.
How do they do this?
I don't know. This is crazy.
This looks more dangerous than 2,000 Leagues Under the Sea or 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, that whole scene with this octopus or whatever.
This
looks way more dangerous than their own land.
Yeah, agreed. Davey's getting washed out to sea and then winds up grabbing onto a chain that's coming out of the sand, luckily. And then they start digging amid the waves, amidst the hurricane, which, come on. And
this is really taking me out of the movie. This
point. Quickly, miraculously, come up with a treasure chest.
Yeah, it's just there. It's just
there it is.
Right there.
Right there at the surface. Just
There it is. As they're all, like, up to their, like, knees in water and waves. Anyway, the actors are all getting beat about by the waves. Ustinov takes a big kahuna wave like a champ. Just totally takes one.
Oh, man.
A later bigger one takes out his stunt double, watching him out to sea.
That's when I wrote it out. What are we watching? What is happening
it now? Is. Well, it's also going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I just put a giant wave, really?
I mean, it's like in the abyss when the aliens make like the giant wave that's threatening to like wipe out New York City or whatever happens. Yeah. And it's just like this mile high wave of like a deep impact or something has happened. And Peter Ustinov blue screened in front of it. Like, hey. Yeah,
it's like tsunami warning. Boom. There he goes.
Yeah. Bye bye. So, Ustinov gets washed away. The remaining gang heads into the woods with the treasure chest in tow. And I, again, have to wonder what Charlie is doing fooling around with all this ridiculousness. Like, I'd bail out at this point. Another tree falls, missing Charlie, but almost taking out Davy this time. And that serves to separate him from the gang. He finds himself face to face with, yes, again, another tribal mask. We get a very Spielberg-y kid screaming in the rain close-up.
Yes.
Yeah, nice acting by Davy there.
Yeah, nice. Felt super Spielberg-y all of a sudden with the lightning and the yelling in the rain. before Davy falls into a pit where suddenly it turns into the Goonies.
Thank you.
The skeleton comes flying out at him off of some apparatus. I'm not sure what was going on there.
Chester Copperpot.
Yeah. So Jim comes to the rescue, but instead of taking Davy out of this underground place, he puts everyone else into what we're told is a chief's tomb.
Smart.
Since, of course, the Florida swamp lets you dig underground crypts.
Right by the shore.
Well-lit crypts.
Well-lit crypts. And when the hurricane's coming in, you really want to, like, climb into a hole underground.
Yeah, that's where you want to hide, yeah.
As it washes over everything.
Don't go to the high country. Go to the low.
No, dig deep. Dig deep. Lower. Dig deep. That's why we all have basements here. In case a hurricane comes, we go into the storm cellar. Anyway, Charlie's kind of upset by these goings-on, starts rattling a stick to calm the spirits. He says they found their way into a sacred burial ground for the bad guy tribe. And if they're found, they will turn them into their squaws, which in this movie apparently means they're slaves?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Yes. So they will not be killed, but they will be turned into slaves and for life. And so the storm abates. Things are pretty rough out on the Bay Lake beach. There's a lot of debris around. Jim is wandering around looking for Charlie, who is apparently bailed. I wasn't sure what he was looking for, but it seems like he was looking for either Charlie or the doctor. I don't know, one or the other. Laureate's back going through the treasure chest, which is indeed full of treasure. And she seems really depressed about it for some reason. I don't know why. She's like,
It was kind of lacking. I found the art design of the treasure a little lacking. Maybe that's what she was upset
about. I agree.
She's like, it's mostly coins.
Yeah.
And this is one of those moments where you don't want the high definition version from Disney Plus because you can see all the shiny plastic.
Yeah. It's like, I would have imagined like that when they first found it on the shore, it was like, that's a decoy treasure because it's so obvious.
Yeah.
And the real treasure would be in the cave that he fell into. But anyway.
Right.
And it would be a lot larger.
No, they get the Mardi Gras beads.
Yes, it's like Party City.
Party City's treasure. I was halfway expecting them to open it and find like a picture of Grassy and the treasure will be here always or something.
The treasure is the friends they made along the way.
Yes.
Exactly.
Or it's like a bottle of the Uju juice or whatever it's called.
Right, the Spooju juice.
Yeah.
That's the real treasure, boys. So anyway, everybody's just kind of depressed, but then Charlie comes a running. He says the bad guy tribe is on the way. So everybody grabs the treasure and they scram. When they hit the beach, they walk into like a wall of gunfire from Spangler and his gang,
who
just sailed up. So they're between a rock and a hard place here.
It is nonstop action. It's
cracking me up that there
it is. Yeah, it really is.
They walk onto the beach and you would never know that they just rode a hurricane. Like they're all, you know, put together.
And yeah, some debris. There's some debris on the shore.
Yeah. So Jim tries to parlay, but Spangler won't have it. Charlie says the bad guy tribe will hear the gunfire and come quickly. So Jim says, well, that might not be all that bad since Laureate and the boys off to hide. Laureate's in favor of giving up the treasure instantly.
Weak.
Believes Spangler's promise that he'll let him go, which is just crazy talk. But Jim says he's got it. So he says, I'll give you the treasure if you swear you'll let us have safe passage out. And Spangler says, sure. You have my word as a gentleman, but it's clear that nobody's buying this. Nobody believes it. And Jim and Charlie grab the treasure and run back into the woods. So in doing so, they lead Spangler and his crew right into the bad guy burial ground and lures them further in by just sort of leaving the treasure chest out in the open. So
I thought this was funny in that they just stop right after it, and they wouldn't be able to hear Jim and Charlie like lugging that giant treasure chest around.
Yeah,
these right. These guys are like the slowest pursuit people ever.
Because nothing is lighter than a giant case of gold.
Well, it's full of plastic.
It's gold case. Sand.
Tokens.
Because it's been sitting in the sand.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And water. It's all wet, too.
Yeah.
The waterlogged chest. So Spangler and Gang go running for the chest, totally trashing the graveyard in the process.
That was hilarious. It's like, might as well push so through good. This secret, sacred...
It's like total yeah. white guy trash. It was like,
yeah,
white man's greed. That's yeah. what I put
like down. Cutaway shots, now. Almost like slow motion, just smashing things to pieces, trashing the camp.
Like if there had been a vase sitting there, they would have picked it up and just thrown it on the ground just because.
like maybe James Cameron was like a. I don't know, gopher on this movie and picked up some ideas for the future. Oh, this is making a good point. I totally agree.
Yes.
I can do something with this.
Feel the menace.
So the heroes are hiding out back in the tomb as Spangler's, like, he gets to the treasure and is opening it up. He's super stoked. But just when he and his boys are about to make off with the loot, the arrows start flying. And they can't see the attackers, but the attackers can see them. This is kind of a spooky moment because it's like arrows coming out of nowhere. And they just like look around. They just see woods. Just woods. The woods are listening. So they start to freak out. And the guys are just starting to bail for the beach. But they kind of get picked off one by one as they go. Spangler's yelling at them to come and help with the treasure when he himself is shot. Not with an arrow, but with a gun by some South Seas witch doctors who have made their way to Florida somehow.
I mean, I know these people are ridiculous, but I thought they set this up so well. The tension is great.
Yes,
yeah,
I agree. And the way they had them play off the people who were chasing them originally to get the bad guys. This is because that was a good twist.
Yeah, it was like a nice little turnabout.
Yeah.
Turn around. Because, I mean, these guys are not to be messed with at all. They round up Spangler and his gang and take them off to be their squaws.
Squaws, which means slaves.
Slaves. So there's a close call moment where the chief, I guess maybe the chief, I don't know, almost sees our heroes hiding in the crypt, but he doesn't. He's just kind of... fixing things up a little bit and doing a little maintenance.
So I don't know. I think that's one of those moments where it's like, did he actually see
him? Yeah. Right. I thought that too.
And then he's like,
ambiguous.
No, I'll let them be.
Interesting. I like that reading. I like that. So anyway, he winds up dragging Spangler off into the woods for who knows what. So back on the beach, Jim and Charlie are loading the treasure into the canoe, which I don't know if that'll work or not, but sure. Davey says he just wants enough to fix up his house and they'll split up the rest. And just as they're getting ready to leave, here comes old Snodgrass making his way down the beach. Looks like he's been like shipwrecked or something. He's got a broken leg, but otherwise fine. you know, I got spit out at sea and then it washed me up on the beach. I'm fine. Thad says, and now that God has saved the doctor, Thad's going to do just as he advised him earlier in the movie and learn as much as possible. Because the doctor had given him a speech about how knowledge is the key to the universe and you should learn as much as possible. So now Thad's going to get some learning. And as they canoe away, Davey asks the doctor to come stay at his house. The doctor says, no, duty calls. He's got to go do his work, spreading his healing amongst the people. Gives some more flowery speech, which Thad responds, what? What'd he say? And we reach the end.
But I cannot in good conscience forego my duty towards those poor unfortunates along the river who await my call with such impatience every year. But it's good to know that you and Grassy will always be there to offer sanctuary. know that the friendships that were forged in the crucible of our adversity shall not tarnish, nor their temper lose.
What'd he say?
Now, just to be a fly on the wall at the Contemporary as Peter Ustinov wakes up for another day of shooting and goes down to the breakfast buffet in the Grand Canyon Concourse.
Can you imagine just running into him? I mean, what a sport he was for like all the stuff that he did in this movie.
Definitely. He did a lot. Yeah, he really put himself out there. He's something, man. I want more Snodgrass. I really do. Mm-hmm. I want more. I would watch a whole other movie of Snodgrass for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm sorry. Well, I think it's time we rate this fine film, this shocking feature we watched. I didn't know what we were getting into tonight.
Well, I didn't either.
So we should do it using our custom-made rubric. What is our scale tonight, Robert?
Our scale tonight is going to be 70s haircuts.
Oh, that's a good one.
Good call.
All right, Robert, on a scale of 1 to 5 70s haircuts, what do you give the plot and writing of The Treasure of Matagumbe?
You know, it's this one that I on my ride home today from the low country of North Carolina, I sat around, or not sat around, but just sat in the car trying to figure it out. And, God, I don't know. I mean, the first act I thought was really, really tight. And then the second act was starting to unravel with the dance sequence, and they had some unnecessary fluff they were throwing in there to stretch it out. And then the third act, for me, unraveled as far as just plot and writing was concerned. So I'm going to ding it pretty hard. I'm going to give it a 2.
All right, Michael, what about you?
I don't know. This is, like, I think the plot is more interesting than the actual writing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Because, like, when you step back and look at the plot, I'm like, yeah, I can get into that. That's... But I don't know. There's not any like real Peter Ustinov aside, because a lot of stuff he says was pretty funny. There's not a lot that's too memorable writing wise. I'll give it a 2-2, but not a low 2, a high 2.
I think I agree with you. I think the things I enjoyed a lot of things about this movie, and I think the way Andy did perhaps, but. I'm not going to attribute too much of that to the plot and writing. Now, I feel like there were a couple of clever things they did along the way with the plot. But, you know, it's like, it's hard with adaptations of books, too.
Yes.
To know.
Yes.
It's like, anyway, for the dialogue, giving it a 2. I mean, yeah, Snodgrass, I don't know. Yeah, I'll give it a high 2 as well. And we'll end with Andy.
I agree with everything you guys have said. I mean, I think... It's pretty loosely held together, but the overall story itself, I think, is decent. I think because it moves so well, it doesn't really, there was never really a moment that I thought it was just a complete drag, because as soon as it started to drag, something crazy would happen and it would pull me right back in. And so for just that alone, I think it should be a high 2, but in order to get our scores right, I'm going to make it a 3 because I feel like that moves it up just a little bit.
That's fair. Right. Okay. Fair. We're going to stay with you for casting and acting. How many 70s haircuts are you going to
get? I thought.
Andy, you said that was, you said that was a 2. Andy?
I was going to give it a 3.
A 3. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
For the casting and acting, Peter Ustinov, I thought he was fantastic. I thought Vic Morrow was a great bad guy. I thought he was very menacing.
He was very menacing.
I did not like anyone else, except for maybe Dub Taylor. and so for, I don't know. I want to give it a 2, but I think I'm going to give it a 3 because it just felt kind of middle of the road.
I'm going to come in with you and say three as well. And that is only because Peter Ustinov. I agree with everything you said, but I would definitely give it a two or maybe even a one. As the acting was just not great.
Right.
But he was so good. Vic was good. But Charlie, it's not his fault, but in all these child actors, Thad was just really bad.
Yeah.
And the Laureate was so bad.
Yeah.
Snodgrass was great, I thought. So I'm going to give it a three because I thought, he's one of my favorite characters we've had in any of these movies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, Michael, what about you?
I'll give it a three as well. I echo everything good you can say about Peter Ustinov and this character. It's such a fun character. And I really liked him because obviously he was a flim-flam man, but he was on the level the rest of the time. When he wasn't doing his shtick, he was on the level. And he wasn't just on all the time.
And that's something that all these movies from this period lack. The person is all the time that. So he was much more nuanced.
When they weren't just on the keelboat together, he was just a regular dude.
Right.
But it was only when he was putting on a show that he would be that. So I like that.
That's interesting.
I didn't think the kids were as bad as they could have been. Yeah. I was really worried when I realized this was led by two kids. And I don't think they were as bad as they could have been. Vic Morrow was great as the bad guy. But Laureate was a hot mess. And Uncle Jim, I just think, was miscast. He was just too dandified, I guess.
Yes, and not, yes.
He didn't come off as a rascal. He just came off as a kind of just a goober.
Yeah. You know, for Ustinov, I was going to say that this is the first time that I think we've seen a warmth from him. Usually it's there's a character, he's just playing some ridiculous character. But like you said, as soon as, when he's not doing his shtick, he's very endearing. And you're oh, this guy's, he's a good dude. And so that's just a new side, at least for me personally, to see him in. And so I like that.
Yeah.
All right, Robert, what about you?
Peter carries it for me. Laureate's horrible Southern accent. But it's a three, because Peter bumps it up for me.
Okay, production value. I'm going to start this one and give it. I'm going to give it I'm going to have to give it a two, man. I want to give location shots extra, but there was a lot of bad in this one, I thought, as far as the special effects are concerned. Do love that music. Kind of convincing myself it's a three, but I think I'm going to keep it at a two. I like some of the art design of some of the stuff, but again, the treasure was so bad. The special effects were bad. That's my story and I'm sticking to it. What about you, Michael?
I'm giving it a three. The B-roll stuff was all bad, but then the practical weather stuff.
That is incredible. Yeah.
Really blew me away of I don't know how they did it. I don't know why they did it.
Right.
It was just totally insane. It was so over the top that I got to give him credit for that. And for the music, a lot of the, it just didn't have the same sort of art direction flair. A lot of sort of old Western stuff, even the Apple Dumpling Gang had at Disney at this time. But still, I think there was some things to recommend it.
Okay, Andy, what about you?
There's some good action here and there, some nice explosions. But it wasn't enough. I agree. Just seeing the waves coming in and seeing that stuntman, Vic's stuntman, Ustinov's stuntman just take a hit like that. There's some little moments like that that I think could bump it up to a three for me, but I'm going to go with a two.
Okay, Wait, do we do Robert? No. Robert?
Nope. I'm going to give it a 3. I think I liked the location stuff, and I thought some of the shots were pretty nice. There were a lot of weird choices, but I think they worked. Like the low angles they were using for Spangler to make him mm-hmm. more mean and menacing looking, and I thought some of the selections they were using, and I thought the practical effects weren't half bad. I mean, certainly during the storm sequence, I'm still trying to figure out how they were pulling off some of those effects. The B-roll was jarring; it took me out of it. But I'm still gonna stick with my 3. I
think. When they lit the cross on fire, how did you feel?
That's true. I didn't even factor in all the pyro in the burning the clan people. That may just bump it up to a 4 for me. But I'll stick with a 3.
I kind of wish I'd thought about that. I'm going with a high 4, guys. They burn clans.
It's the rare Disney movie with the burning clan members. So, you got to give it credit for that.
That's true. Jeez. It's true. Well, I'm going to stay at a 2, but you all have made some sound arguments. How did they do that storm footage? We'll never know. But we're going to end with entertainment value, and I'm going to give it to Robert first. How many 70s haircuts are you going to give this movie?
This was an interesting movie, and because I went in really cold, I had no idea what it was about. I think I looked at a couple of clips, and I was confused just because I just sort of jumped in the middle of the movie maybe earlier in the season. I couldn't tell if it was like taking place up north it was just the lake sequences, but yeah. But I was entertained really. All the way through it, I got a little out of it at the eerie end, kind of waiting for it to end. But up until then, I liked it. So I'm going to give it a high 3 for entertainment value, almost a 4.
Okay, what about you, Andy?
I am going to give this a 4 because I enjoyed it. I agree with you that I think it could have been like 20 minutes shorter, and I think it had been much better.
Yeah,
but I still thought that they, for what they did, it still moved pretty well. And again, every time that I was like starting to like, okay, I'm starting to sour a little bit, something crazy would happen. And it's not a 4 as in I think this is great, I'm really loving it. It's just crazy. It's like all the things that kept happening, everything we've mentioned, like the Klansmen showing up and then punching a kid in the face, like just stuff like that would just make me laugh. And I'm like, what's going to happen next? And so I was entertained.
I 100% agree with you. I'm going to give it a 4 as well. I watched this movie when it came out on Disney+, but I think I was half watching it, and watching the whole thing, I was just like, oh my gosh. Just the changes and the stuff that made me laugh. Again, I just agree. I echo everything you said. Michael, what about you?
I'll give it a 3, but a strong 3. I think it could have been a little tighter, could have been a little punchier in the script area. But, I agree. I've enjoyed talking about it so much that it's like made my enjoyment of it go up more. Because when you really stop and think about it, so many insane things happen in this movie that it's just like, yeah, that was bananas. So, yeah, I agree with Andy's assessment of it not being a great movie, but it being an entertaining one for sure.
All right, well, let's punch this into our computer that wore tennis shoes and see what the Treasure of Matacumbe got. Robert, what does it get?
This one gets a 2.1. Which is going to bring it into a 3-way tie now with Cool Runnings last month's with a 2.1.
It's 2.1, right?
8.1. Did I say 2.1?
Yeah.
2.81.
Oh, okay. I was about to say that sounded low.
Yep.
So 2.81, 3-way tie with Cool Runnings with a 2.81 and Herbie Rides Again with a 2.81, putting it tied for 34th overall.
Wow. Okay. Sounds about right, I guess.
Just above Freaky Friday with a 2.8.
Which Freaky Friday?
The original Freaky Friday. Yeah. Andy's Freaky Friday.
It's now becoming the Brown Family Freaky Friday because my kids like it now.
Oh man! All right.
It's Snowball Express is above it with a 2.88.
Well, let's wrap up the Treasure of Matakumbe and sail off to Discovery Island. I catch the blue flag launch back to the Contemporary. With Peter Ustinov, we will catch a show at the Top of the World before catching the fireworks. And Robert, what is coming up next for us at the Medfield College Film Society?
I just imagining Peter at the Top of the World right now that 70s decor, just hanging out up in the corner there. So it's that time of year or the season. And to be honest, it might be my favorite time of the season, our podcast season, that is. It's that time when we tackle the tough movies, the movies with subject matters that, you know, jerk at our heartstrings, the dramatic Disney films, if you will. And boy, do we have a doozy. It's got society favorite Nancy Olsen in it from Absent-Minded Professor, Academy Award winners Carl Malden and Jane Wyman is in it. But most of all, we got us a Mucci flick coming up, guys.
Yeah, he's back. Nice.
Oh, boy. Another Mucci film.
Ah, great.
And as it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. And I recall, he's in high gear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's doing it. So, has one other actress in it. You've probably guessed who it is now. It is Miss Haley Mills. The movie, of course, is Pollyanna.
I'm pretty excited about this.
I don't think I've seen
this
since I was maybe like 6 or 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be good.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it'll be good. It's been a long time since I've seen it, too.
I just remember there were a lot of questions from my mom, like, because it was...
From your mom? It's,
or no, for my mom.
Oh, okay.
Because like, it may be from my mom too. Like, Robert, what do you do? it's got some dark moments in it.
Yeah, it does.
Sure does. Yeah, we always should be a real laugher because we dark ones.
I, of course, have never seen it. So,
Oh, Andy.
Yeah.
Oh boy!
Oh boy!
It's gonna be quite the film to watch. Well, give us your thoughts and let us know what you think of Pollyanna. Are you gonna be able to watch this with a serious eye? Are we gonna be able to watch this with a serious eye, or will we do what we normally do with the dramatic films of the Disney catalog? Well, I think we all know the answer to that, but you can still email us at info@midfieldfilm.com or on social media @midfieldfilm. We love hearing from you.
There's a legend around these parts about a treasure. A treasure that ain't like any you done seen before. It's a treasure that comes from the heart and from the magical fingers and sharp eye of a talented graphic artist.
Binding graphics.
There's a legend around these parts about a man. And no ordinary man at that. You don't ever see him coming. And never hear him leave. He's like the wind, a stiff breeze of charisma and intrigue with a faint whiff of brute. But in his wake, he leaves a trail of graphic art.
Binding graphics.
Who is this mystery man? Whose flag does he fly? Is he man or machine or beast of burden or fruit of the vine? Down around Boggy Creek, some folk claim to have seen him. Only to insist that he's the elusive skunk ape.
Skunk ape?
You heard me. I don't chew my cabbage twice. But this feller...
Binding graphics!
This feller ain't no skunk ape. Believe it or not, he's just as real. Sorry. That was stupid. Believe it or not, he's just as regular a feller as you're likely to meet. He puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like you or me. Assuming you wear pants, I ain't here to judge.
Biden graphics.
He's Todd Knapperick, and he holds the map to a treasure chest of graphics goodness. in a fetid swamp of visual disasters all buzzing round you like mosquitoes. He's a breath of fresh air and a beam of pure sunshine.
Binding graphics!
Todd Knapperick. Mark that name well. Commit it to memory. Pass it from generation to generation like a whispered prayer. Dare you seek him out? Dare you look him in the eye and gaze upon this visage of greatness? Dare you harness the sheer unbridled power of his talents for the benefit of your own business, trade association, guild, or weblog? What will you do? What will you do?
Go to bindinggraphics.com. That's BYDAND graphics.com.
And on also on Upworks, I guess.
Enter code SKUNKAPE to let Todd know we sent you.
BindinggraphicsDotcom.
So from all of us at the Medfield College Film Society, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next month for Pollyanna.
Pollyanna.
Proud are we of mighty Medfield, alma mater dear. All your sons and daughters hail to thee, Medfield College of Technology. And while we hold your banner high, rah, rah, we shout your praises to the sky, rah, rah. For proud are we of mighty Medfield, loyal.